Ruth 1, 1 through 5. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was no famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was The name of his wife was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. Ephraites of Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to the country of Moab and remained there. Then Naomi's husband died, and she was left and her two sons. Now they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpha, and the name of the other Ruth, and they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died, so the woman survived her two sons and her husband.
Thank you, Hunter. Sorry about all those big words. God can be trusted even in troubled times. What confidence that can give us. The book of Ruth is a very special book to me, and likely to you. The author just begins by telling us a day and a place and a time and a problem. Kind of sounds like your life and mine, doesn't it? You may or may not be in a troubled time right now, but life is full of trouble. And if you're not in trouble right now, I heard somebody say either you're going into a storm, you're in a storm, or you're just coming out of a storm. Well, it's been like that since the Garden of Eden. The author begins by saying it was during the time when the judges ruled. After finally Israel was able to enter the Promised Land after their 40 years wandering, there was a period of time when God would appoint various men as leaders. And even one time, Deborah was appointed a woman. Some of the other judges whose names you probably know is Samson, Gideon. Those are some of the more familiar names. Some of the judges are names we almost never talk about. One I always remember is Ehud. What a name. Aren't you glad you have to read that one, Hunter? It was during that period of time, and it doesn't say any more about when it was. But we also know of that period of time that there would be a generation that would arise that knew not God, and then hardship would come. And then there would be another one arise, another leader arise who might bring the people back to God. And it was a tumultuous time like this, up and down, up and down. And at this time, the problem is famine. Elimelech has a problem. His family can't get food to eat. In our own world, as we see people turning more and more away from God, notice they start talking about famine again. But he hears there's food in a place called Moab. Now, Moab is a neighboring nation that also comes, it comes from the son of Lot. Born to him by his daughter, who feared there were no more men left in the world after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. The Moab people had been a problem. There was not a good relationship between these two countries. In fact, God said a Moabite would not be allowed in the assembly of the 10th generation. But they heard there was food down there, and that's where they went. Almost reminds me a little bit of Lot pitching his tent towards Sodom. They have two children, Mahlon and Chilion. Well, after they get down there, and Elimelech dies, leaves his wife Naomi, and in that day, a widow was in a very, very bad situation. There was no government help. She was on her own. But she has her two sons. They marry Moabite women. And that's what happens. You will marry someone around where you are. one of the great reasons I've always believed in Christian education is you're apt to marry somebody there. I married the first girl I met at Lipscomb, and it turned out real good. And I sent three kids there, and they never found anybody. So, you know, doesn't always work that well. But they married these Moabite women. Well, Malin and Killian die. And now we have three widows. And that's where our passage, our lesson text brings us. Naomi, here's there's food now back in her country. And so she says to the two girls, she says, I don't have any more sons for you to marry. In that day, if a man died and did not leave any heirs, then it was the responsibility of his closest relative to marry his wife and rear children in his name. Genealogy was very important in their time. And she said, I have no sons, and I'm old, and even if I married a man today, you wouldn't want to wait till we had children and raise those children up. Why don't you just go back to your mother's houses? Orpha weeps, kisses her, and leaves. But this other girl, Ruth, she will not leave. And one of the most beautiful pieces of poetry that you'll find in Scripture, I believe you find starting in about verse 16. As she explains to her mother-in-law why she's not leaving. Because mother makes it very strong. I want you to leave. I want you to go back to your family. I want you to have a good life. You have nothing but misery with me. Here's what she says. You've heard it often. If you know anything from the book of Ruth, you probably know this. Entreat me not to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. And the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you from me. Notice what she said. Especially a point I want to point out to. One, she says, your people will be my people. She wants to leave her familiar surroundings with the Moabites, and she wants to go and be a part of the Jewish community. And then she says, your God will be my God. Wow. She's going to leave paganism behind, and she is going to become a follower of Yahweh, of the God of the Jews. And she will not be persuaded not to do this. And so the two widows go back to Bethlehem. When they get there, it's quite a stir in the city. If you're reading along with me there, is this Naomi? She'd been gone so long, but some of the people still remember her. Now, the word Naomi means pleasant, but she changes her name, says, don't call me pleasant anymore. Call me Mara. It means bitter. For the Lord has dealt bitterly with me. She's lost her husband. She's lost her sons. She feels bitter. She's Mara. Some of you folks have lost people like this. And you know something of the hurt and the pain and the loneliness and the loss she feels. She went away full, came back empty. Sometimes when we come in contact with people, they're in that situation of empty. Ruth is such a wonderful, wonderful woman. Though she's a Moabite, she's a wonderful, wonderful. People all over the world, there are good people everywhere. Good-hearted people. There are a lot of bad ones. There's some good ones. What do you do with Mara? What do you do with someone filled with bitterness? How do you react? She reacts just as if Naomi was still Naomi. She treats her with love and care. Right now, the Bible says that it's barley harvest. That comes just a little bit later than we are right now on the calendar. Barley and wheat harvest will take place in the early to midsummer. And the barley is harvested first. They had in the Old Testament a wonderful arrangement for the poor. Those who had fields of grain were told, don't harvest the corners. And if anything falls, if you drop anything, don't pick it up. Leave it for the poor, that they can come in and that they can gather grain and they can have something to eat. And let them keep their dignity and yet at the same time eat. And it caused everyone to be generous toward the poor, because that's what God expected. God blesses those who bless the poor and the needy. It's still that way. And so Ruth knows this, and she says to Naomi, I'm going to go gleaning. And whoever will allow me in their field and be gracious to me, I will get us something to eat. And she goes out, and Rick, I have never heard that song that you sang before. Hold God's Unchanging Hand. I've never heard that song before. It's a beautiful song. I've got to study that song some more. 178, I believe it was. Yeah, that's. I want to learn and study that song some more, because that's exactly, it describes exactly what goes on here. These women are having a hard time. A lot of sorrow, a lot of heartache, a lot of pain. But Ruth's going to go ahead and make the best of it. And so she goes gleaning. And it says she happens into the field of a close relative. His name is Boaz. And it mentions he was very rich. And so I'd like for you to pick up with me and kind of meet Boaz. We're talking about King David's great-grandparents. I believe I got the right number of greats there, right here. Anyway, he is a good man. He's a good-hearted man. In verse 4 of chapter 2, now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord be with you. In those days, because of robbers and thieves, the people would have their fields out from the towns, but they would live in the walled towns for protection. So here he comes from Bethlehem. He comes out to his fields, and the workers are already there. And right away we see a pleasant attitude on his heart toward them. And then it says in verse 5, who is this young woman out here? He notices a stranger in the group. And the servant, verse 6, the servant was in charge of the reapers, answered and said, this is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. Now, you know, in little towns, news travels fast. So he can identify her this way, and right away Boaz has heard about this girl. She's not the usual Moabite at all. She's very, very, very wonderful, very special. And so, underlined in verse 7, and she continued from the morning until now, though she rested a little while in the house. Hunter, here's a real good thing. When you're looking for a wife, I don't know if you ever will, but if you did, get a good worker. Is that a good idea? Some of you guys, you're afraid to tell me, aren't you? But yeah, that's a good idea. She's a good worker. We're going to notice several positive characteristics about this lady. She came early in the morning. She got started when the sun came up, when everybody else was starting. Verse 8, Boaz greets her. You know, one of the things that I've noticed about this congregation is the friendly way you are with people. Some places you can go in and out of and have nobody speak to you. Did you know that? I don't think you could do that at Neely's Bend. I believe you're gonna take notice. When you go to a strange place, you feel funny, kind of. You know, nothing seems to fit. You aren't used to these people or this place or this building, and y'all have been that way with Patty and I. You've just welcomed us in, and we are so grateful, and we appreciate Mike's leadership and Wanda's leadership in this too. We noticed that about them, and I notice it with the elders. I appreciate the attitude you have toward people. And he is that way. He's welcoming to her. Notice verse 8. And Boaz said to Ruth, "You will listen, my daughter." And that was a friendly term in that time. "Will you not? Do not go and glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close to my young women." And then he says, "Let your eyes be on the field where they reap, and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn." Now, a gleaner was on his own. He was to bring his own lunch. He was to bring his own water. Water wasn't that easy to get way out there in those fields. But he treats her like one of the group. Says, "You just go. If you get thirsty, you go get you a drink. And look out there at all that grain. You just go harvest wherever you go look ahead to the field and gather your crops just like you want to do." And so he gives her special privileges right away. And that makes people feel so good when we treat them that way. They feel so welcome and so wanted. And she feels that way. Verse 10. And she fell on her face and bowed down to the ground and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner?" She feels out of place. And when you come into a strange place, you feel that way. Well, he has treated her like part of the group already. And she says, "Why did you do this?" It shocks her. And it does. When people are nice to you today, isn't it kind of surprising? Now, when I came to Tennessee back in the 60s, everybody was nice. But now, you meet some folks from New York and some other places that aren't necessarily like that. You probably haven't noticed that. But I've noticed that. That folks they don't really have time for you. Yeah, some of y'all noticed it. I can see your smile. That's the way it is. She's welcomed. She's welcomed. He makes her feel comfortable, makes her feel safe. I've told the young men, "Now you leave her alone." And as the passage continues, she just amazed. And Boaz answered and said to her, verse 11, "It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and have come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to trust." What a beautiful phrase. We'll hear that a little later on, too, by the way. She's come to trust the Lord. You almost get the picture of the little bird getting under its mama's wings. Makes me remember some years ago, I was mowing a field that we had at the time. And it was about this time of year. No, it was just a little later, about a month later. And I was mowing, and I'd seen this hen turkey out there, and she didn't seem to want to leave. And I wondered why. I got off my mower and I started moving through the field, and all of a sudden these little brown and yellow speckled little turkeys just started darting everywhere, and they all run right to mama. Well, that's the picture here. Ruth, here Naomi, they're out there and they're in danger. And he uses this beautiful picture, under whose wings you've come to trust. And that's the thing, the Lord has wonderful wings. We can trust him. We can come there and we can feel safe. Well, as the passage continues, I want you to notice some more beautiful things. And then she said to him, verse 13, "Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord. You have comforted me and have spoken kindly to me, to your maidservant, though I am not like your maidservant." She still feels very different. She's still not comfortable. Verse 14, "Now Boaz said to her at mealtime, 'Come here and eat the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar.' So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed her parched grain, and she ate and was satisfied." And Hunter, you paying attention? "And kept some back." She's not only hardworking, she's thrifty. Ira North, I remember he had a lesson, "If I Were a Woman." And in that lesson he says, "A woman with a soup spoon can throw more out the back door than her husband can bring in with a scoop shovel." Hunter, this is important. She works hard and she's thrifty. I'm sorry, Hunter, I have to pick on you. I should pick on somebody else. You look like you're strong. Okay. Well, y'all listen. How about that? All right, let's look some more at this. This is good. Now, verse 15. "When she arose to glean, Boaz commanded the young men, saying, 'Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her.'" She can just go right up there and get the best of the crops if she wants to. And don't y'all correct her. And then he said, "And let grain fall, in bundles fall purposely for her, and leave it so she may glean, and do not rebuke her." So he said, just pull it out of the combine and throw it out there for her. he's giving her a lavish gift. A few weeks ago, we had John Orr here and for the Bible class hour, and he was talking about how to reach out in our communities. And John is a big believer in this kind of giving, this kind of help to people that shows you really care about them. He thinks that is very, very powerful, and it's because it is. Because it is. One of the best things that you can do to build relationships is to give folks meaning. This is a meaningful gift. These women are going to starve to death if they don't get some food somewhere. Boaz is making sure that Ruth is going to do well in her gleaning. So, verse 17, "And so she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out the wheat that she had gleaned." I think one other time we talked about how you had to thrash to get the seed out of the stalk. And anyway, this is a good worker. She's gleaning, and now she's beating out the grain. And when she gets it done, she has about an ephah of barley. Now, that's more than a half bushel. That's more than a day's what would be expected of a regular worker. She has done very, very well. And so she took it up, and she went into the city. And her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and so she brought out and gave to her what she had kept back when she was satisfied. She brought the doggy bag home for Naomi. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where have you gleaned today? And where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you." So she already likes him and doesn't even know who it is. Notice how the gift has changed Mara, and she's getting sweeter. So she told her mother-in-law, with whose she had worked, and said, "This man's name where I worked today was Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be the Lord who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and to the dead." And Naomi said to her, "This man is a relation of ours and one of our close relatives." That was very important. Close relative. already Naomi can hear wedding bells. She sees where this is going. Any of you girls good at this? I don't know why it is. Once a girl catches her guy, she tries to help every other girl catch one. Have you noticed that? Yeah, Patty's like that. Stay away from her, Hunter. She'll get you hooked up. So right away, Naomi can see where this thing could go. So she says to her, now, you stay with her maidens, and you glean in his fields, and don't let anyone catch you gleaning anywhere else. And so she did so all the way through the harvest. And by chapter 3, and by now Naomi has the whole plan figured out. She says, now Boaz is winnowing. We talked a little bit about this. I don't know whether Sunday morning or Sunday night we talked about this, how you would have to separate the grain from the head. You'd have to get that out of there. And there were several ways to do it. You could beat it out like she did. If you had an ox or something, you could have him tread out the grain. Some of the translations will talk about treading out the corn. I was talking really about wheat. But you could use him. You could put a sled behind him and let him pull it. But don't muzzle the ox so he can eat while he works. There were various ways to do it. But you didn't dare go off and leave your grain. I know some of the folks in construction work right now, and they're having a big problem with people stealing stuff on the construction site. You didn't go off and leave your grain. You stayed with it. So at night, Boaz is going to be out there until they get the grain gathered in. He's going to be out there. And so that's what Naomi's thinking. And so look at verse 3. So wash yourself, anoint yourself, put on your best garment, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Now, there's nothing inappropriate in their culture in what's being suggested here. It's not that kind of thing at all. She's going to request of him to consider marrying her in order to carry out the levirate law for her family and for her dead husband. And Naomi is planning all that out for her. So she says, you go down there and you wait till he lays down, and then you find out where he lays, and then you go over there and you uncover his feet and lay down at his feet. And then he'll tell you what to do from there. And sure enough, it says about midnight, Boaz turned over and realized, there's a young woman laying at my feet. Who are you? He says, I am Ruth. And now here, I wanted to be sure to notice this with you. Verse 9, I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative. In other words, he has already commended her for coming for refuge under the Lord's wings, and now she says, I would like to come under your wing. I would like for you to take care of me. And he says, that is a mighty good idea. I'm sorry, I moved that to West Virginia. He says, I'll tell you what, I'm so glad you didn't go for one of the young fellas. You're a smart girl. But now, here's the thing. Boaz already thought about this some, because he says, there is one relative closer to you than me. And he gets first refusal, according to the law. And I'll take it up with him tomorrow. Right now, you lay still there till morning, and he doesn't send her home in the middle of the night, not safe. You stay there in the morning. And when she, before you can see well, she starts back home. But first he says, come here, I don't want you to go home empty-handed. And so he gives her, I'm trying to find the reference right now, I believe it's 3 ephahs of barley, and loads her down in her shawl, and she goes home with all this grain. And she tells Naomi what's happened. And Naomi says, well, just sit still now. He will not rest until he's settled this issue. And sure enough, the next morning, he's at the city gate. He finds that closer relative. He gathers some elders together and says, would you all sit down here and be witnesses of this business transaction we're going to do? And she explains to the closer relative, you are the first relative for Naomi who's come back to us. And you can redeem her property if you want to. And he says, okay, I'll do that. And he says, well, you also have to marry Ruth in the deal. And he says, I'm not going to do that. And he says, okay, then I will. So he told her, yes, and she agrees, and they get married, and they have a baby. His name is Obed, which means worshipped. Don't you know who he was? And Naomi, bitter old Naomi, she becomes his nurse, the one who cares for him. And all the ladies of Bethlehem say to her, now you're more blessed than ever. And Naomi says of Ruth, you're better than seven sons. It's worked out so well. God had been there all along. And then, as the author closes the book, it gives you the lineage down to David. And of course, that will eventually go on to Jesus. Yes. When we read the genealogies in the Gospels, we see these names. And this one, we get to look into this family, and we notice that life wasn't easy. It was hard. And yet God's hand was through it all. Even the loss of her husband, of her sons, of the famine. His hand was in it all, and he works all things together for good to them that love him. And he'll do that for us. If you look back in your life, can you see God's hand? Has he helped you through some hard times? Has he helped you through some broken hearts? Some hardships? Some pain? Have you ever found you're better on the other side? One thing I've never been able to do to the degree I wish I could within a congregation, I would like to build a pain bank. So when someone loses a child, there are folks in that congregation who've already gone through that, and they know the pain. They know the heart. And they could come alongside them and strengthen them and comfort them. People in the neighborhood who've had that loss, you can reach out to them in a special way. Our oldest son was born with cerebral palsy. Our oldest daughter had a congenital dislocation of her left hip. That little girl, she just started to walk, just started to pull up, and Patty had gone to the pediatrician with her and come back and tell me about she's got all these problems. We've got to take her to Memphis. They've got to do surgery. They've got to put her up in traction. I never will forget that first year of her life, what a rough, awful year that was. They'd put her in a cast and twisted the legs in a strange, grotesque way to get that hip socket to heal and grow, and had a board between it. Couldn't put her in a baby carriage. I found a little wagon in a secondhand store, and I painted it up for her, and we'd have to lay her on a pillow in that wagon to take her around. People would look and see that, and I would see the pity in their face, and I just wanted to slug them. I just hate being pitied. But anyway, that was my problem with it. Our second daughter's born. We knew to check for that. Sure enough, she's got it too, and they say it travels in blue-eyed blondes. It's a birth defect. Well, both those girls turned out great. They turned out fine. But we decided we'll adopt a child. Lo and behold, if he doesn't have cerebral palsy, and I remember going out in the night sky and saying to God, why? Till some years later, in the congregation where I was preaching, there was a family that had a child and he had cerebral palsy. And they said we could offer them comfort in ways nobody else could because we'd been down that path. By the way, that young man was here at worship just the other, Easter Sunday. So he turned out well, too. But at the time, it nearly kills you sometimes. God can be trusted. even in hard times. Aren't you glad he's your God? Are you his child? That's the question. If you're not a Christian, you need to be one today. If there's anything that I can do, if there's anything that the elders can, anything that Mike can do, and Mike's needing to get well right now, but he would do anything he could for you right now. He would talk to you. We'd listen to you. Wanda would, Patty, all of us. This congregation is a loving place. You can bring any hurt or any pain or any problem that you have because this is a healing place. This is a healing place. And today, if you've never been baptized, we'd be honored to do that with you, help you right here today. If you're a child of God and you haven't been living as you should, come back right now. We'll help you heal with that as well. God will, and we'll be there to help as we can too. Whatever your problem, won't you come while together we stand and sing.